Hello, I'm Bruce Edwards, and welcome to this podcast produced by the International Monetary Fund. In this program, we speak with Abhijit Banerjee, professor of economics at MIT and author of Poor Economics, a radical rethinking of the way to fight global poverty.
We are not very good at raising the money. We're not very good at distributing the money. That said, with the money we have, we often give it away to the wrong people. So the first thing to fix would be to stop giving the subsidies to the rich.
Abhijit Banerjee has worked in dozens of countries trying to better understand the economics of poverty. He argues anti-poverty policies often fail because of an inadequate understanding of poverty. Banerjee participated in a panel discussion on sustainable economic development during the IMF World Bank spring meetings. I began our conversation by asking him why we know so little about the more than a billion poor people in the world.
Well, it's very expensive to collect data, to be honest. It's not, there's a billion people, but how many of us live next door to them? I mean, so you don't see them. They're kind of mostly invisible, except often in their most extreme manifestation. So you see the person who is, begging in the street, and you see the person who's maybe made it out of poverty and tells his own story. And, I used to sell tea and now I'm X. But between those two extremes, you often don't encounter most of these people. They're not in your life. So it's not at all obvious that we have any way of intuitively understanding what's easy and difficult for people. I think we need data. We need to actually focus on the problem.
I found it interesting in the foreword of your book, you say that poverty is the biggest problem in the world. How is poverty the biggest problem in the world?
Let's say that if you believe that your concept of welfare should be founded in the welfare of people, as against, religiosity or beauty or other things, if you think that the standards of living of people are the primary determinant of welfare, then I think it's obvious that that's where the biggest losses are.
And you also speak a lot about poverty traps. In your opinion, do you think there are circumstances in which people or groups of people do, in fact, find themselves trapped in poverty?
So there are two answers to that question. One is, do I believe it's true? I believe it's true. Do I have any very well-founded reason to believe it's true? Much harder question. I would say what the evidence on these interventions, which sort of help people today and see that, many years later, they're still richer, suggests that there's something like a trap, because if there weren't one, you would think that they would fall back. If it were the case that, people are doomed to be who they are, and some people are just poor because they are unskilled or undisciplined or hardworking enough, then you would imagine that, you couldn't get them out of poverty by doing something today. Because, tomorrow they'll still be lazy and they'll still go back to wherever they belong. And I think the evidence suggests that that's not true, that many people are in a situation where, given an opportunity, they would be in a different place.
So if people are given more opportunities, the more successful they may be at pulling themselves out of poverty.
Sure. I mean, if you think you can identify a particular reason for a trap, which I think is not easy, but if you could, then it would be great, because what in a sense the interventions I was talking about just now, these are kind of very broad brush. They kind of give you training and they give you some money and they give you some assets and they give you all kinds of things, and the hope is that one of them will stick. And if you had a much better understanding of exactly what was sticking, and you could identify, for Joe it's money, but for Jane it's confidence, then you would give Jane confidence and Joe money, and things would work better. You'd save resources. I'm less optimistic that we will get to that level of sophistication. So, and one shouldn't let the perfect be the enemy of the good.
How important do you think money is when we're talking about aid and sustainable development?
So aid is a slightly tricky word there. I mean, because aid often is interpreted to mean foreign aid, like aid sent by OECD countries to poor countries. It is a very small part of social support, even in the developing world. It's a tiny, tiny, tiny part of it. Most money that's spent for social support is spent by local governments, local charities. All of these are bigger than aid. So let's define it to be money rather than aid. And money is very important. I think the idea that you could, you know, help poor people without spending any money, that was the kind of the promise of microcredit, which is that there is essentially a matter of lubrication. And I think that turns out to be, I think, mostly false. So I would say lubrication is not a substitute for resources. Real resources count. You know, better run, better quality education, you know, more assets for poor people. All of those things are real money, and real money needs to be spent.
Hmm. And how effective are we at raising and distributing that money?
So we are not very good at raising the money. We're not very good at distributing the money. That said, with the money we have, we often give it away to the wrong people. So the first thing to fix would be to, you know, stop giving the subsidies to the rich, which is a very large part of the subsidies. So if you actually did manage to take away the subsidies from the rich, I think you would have lots of money for the poor. It just is very politically, it's difficult to get subsidies away from the rich. It's something of a sad leftover from, I think, the 70s and the 80s, when that was the politically preferred instrument of transferring resources. And those subsidies have become a real problem for many countries.
You're talking about direct transfers rather than subsidies, essentially.
Yes.
You're thinking is that that's a more efficient way of distributing
absolutely.
Money?
Absolutely. Yes. Especially, you know, power and water are often subsidized. They're extraordinarily distortionary. They have environmental consequences which are disastrous, and they are inequitable. They tend to benefit the people who have large power-using machines tend to benefit from power subsidies more than anyone else. So, absolutely.
What do you think that we really need to do, you know, in a longer term, in order to improve the lives of so many people? And how likely do you think that the next generation of aid workers and philanthropists will actually get it right? What will it take?
What will it take? I mean, I think there's a very fast-growing body of evidence, which is both, I think, much more reliable evidence than we ever had, and more categorical as well, on what are really stupid things to do and what actually works. So I think that train has kind of left the station, and it's good because it's sort of penetrating levels of policy. Now, how long will it take? It'll take a while to really penetrate down to the government bureaucrat who decides on a program. I mean, the bureaucrats have their own entirely unwarranted opinions on things, and we struggle with that all the time. We work a lot with government bureaucrats, and some are wonderful and some are desperately opinionated with no warrant. And, you know, it's going to be a battle. You know, we've made a lot of progress, but I do feel that it's going to be a long battle.
That was Abhijit Banerjee, professor of economics at MIT and author of Poor Economics, A Radical Rethinking of the Way to Fight Global Poverty. You can watch the webcast of the seminar entitled Sustainable Economic Development in a Challenging Global Environment at imf.org.
You can also hear more podcasts like this one while you're there, or listen on your smartphone by searching for IMF Podcasts on your favorite podcast app.